Hello and welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hi everyone and welcome to this week's episode. Today I'm joined by Victor Lucelle Smolening, who is a ritual maker who works with rituals as a powerful part of transformative processes, community building and culture change. He approaches the topic of ritual through a lot of directions by creating art about it, studying it academically, engaging with it spiritually, and by taking on the meaningful moments in life with self-made rituals. Since 2013, Victor has lived in 5 countries and worked with clients all over the globe on his journey to make sense of how to engage with rituals in the modern world. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on my show and having a conversation with me.
Thank you for having me.
Before we jumped on here, we were talking a little bit about ritual, and I realized that I've only ever spoken to women about ritual. So for me, this is a really exciting conversation because it just is a different perspective, a different angle, and I feel like you have.
That's interesting. Why do you think you've only ever spoken to women about ritual?
I have no idea. I have no idea why. Potentially because, and actually that's not entirely true, I just don't think I've spoken to men in the same depth as I started to with you. And I feel like I've spoken in the lot. I think this is a very personal thing rather than it necessarily being a cultural thing or a global thing. I think it's very personal to me, just that the spaces that I've moved in and the depth of conversation around ritual has very often stemmed from a place of the cyclical nature of being a woman and the necessity to ritualize it, which hasn't been amplified or the focus in many of our lives. And I can only speak as a woman, so I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I get that point of view.
Let's start how we always start then, otherwise we'll just dive in at the deep end and everyone will go, what? What does being an adult mean to you? What is adulting?
It would be easy to jump into some kind of idea that it's about being responsible and independent, and so on. But I don't really think that's the case, right? I think it's about identifying with the side of yourself that can kind of look at your qualities and that has that freedom to alter who you are. Whatever that part of you is, for me, being an adult has been to kind of empower that part and thus being more free as well. Mm-hmm. I think if the idea of being an adult would be to be a responsible person only, I think I would be very boring at parties. You know?
That'd be very boring full stop, right? And then and then become so boring that I would be bored and then I would get depressed and then I would be even more boring. Like it's a perpetuating thing.
Yeah. But then again, identifying with that part that allows yourself to be responsible and also be irresponsible then offers the opportunity to be responsible when it's needed.
And often I talk on this podcast about also being responsible for my own joy, also being responsible for my own pleasure, for my own happiness, for my own irreverence, like the whole thing.
Kind of acknowledging one's agency, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, but agency in an interdependent way, I would argue, because. You know, I've lived a life where I've for many years made friends in the autumn and kind of said goodbye to them in the spring, and been in a lot of loneliness somehow, and that's the worst thing to to be. It's like without belonging, we're fucked. We're always under threat then.
I think it's so important that you're talking about this, because my experience and the experience I have with the communities that I am in and the clients that I work with and the people around me and the friends around me is that, I'm only going to really talk from my journey, is that independence was the thing I was seeking, right? Like freedom, autonomy, all of those. Mm. When I learned the word autonomy, I was 16, and I named my car, my first car, Autonomy, and it was everything. It was everything to me. Like all I wanted was autonomy.
Mm.
And when years later I reached a place of autonomy, financially, emotionally, you know, physically, I was really fucking lonely.
Mm.
And then I realized that what I really wanted was interdependence, which is a shitty word and it's just not very sexy, but like that's what we really want, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is this notion of positive and negative freedom.
Yeah,
where negative freedom would be the freedom from things. So the freedom from interference and obstacles. I think it's more healthy to focus on positive freedom. Just to put it in context, it would be like an easy example, the use of public toilets.
Mm-hmm.
So the freedom from having a belly that needs to go to the toilet when you're in a public space, it's yes. not really easy to come by. Whereas this kind of positive freedom of I guess learning how to use public toilets, it's much more liberating and much more useful. It's been a deal breaker for me anyway. I spend a lot of time in libraries.
So. Mm-hmm. I love that that's where we ended up. Okay, so segue back. How does ritual fit into this?
So well, if we speak about freedom and ritual, I think ritual is a great way to address taboos, break taboos. You know, if you've broken a concept within yourself that says something is forbidden, a form of behavior, a form of interaction, self-identification, you know, once you're past that threshold, you're past it. And you don't have to go back. And that, I think, ritual can do very well. If you say, I'm a person who is not allowed to, etc. If you then go ahead and do that act in a ritualized way, you will kind of create that allowance for yourself.
Okay. I love that, by the way. I think it's really powerful. And I love this use of ritual. And I think this stems into one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, and the thing that I said at the beginning about kind of the masculine and the feminine around ritual, and this may or may not be true, and something that I'm really keen to explore with you. When we very first started talking, you said to me that you discovered ritual through frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I discovered ritual through devotion.
Yeah. Sure. And I don't know, you wanted to make that about the masculine and feminine way somehow?
I think that's really interesting because my experience has been, so the most of the ritual that I have in my life, most of the ritual that I have been seeking has been a place for devotion, a place to honor the sacred, to honor myself, to honor and to find there may be grief and there may be anger and there may be frustration, but from a place of devotion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
it sounded to me when you were talking about it that that's not how you found ritual. So I'd love to know, how did you find ritual and what did it mean for you?
Yeah, I guess where you're coming from. Like I've had more mental health issues than I've had holy things in my life. Yeah, it's true. For me, looking back at my life, I spent a fair bit of time in chapel with my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know really how this affected me, but she's a host. She would make coffee and kind of host the people there. And when I was with her, I would join her for her sessions there. So I had definitely ritual in my life through her quite a bit. But other than that, in my family, it wasn't so much. Right? Mm. And then I had growing up where it was hard for me to live with my parents in my late teens. So I decided to move out at around 16. I think I'd read some like sociology articles on Wikipedia and got an introduced to the kind of the concept that you are what you eat. Mm-hmm. Also socially, like you become, you're a product of your, whatever your impressions, yeah, whatever situations you're in. So I wanted to be more in control, I guess, of the kind of stuff I got fed. So not only for self protection, also for kind of having some agency in deciding who I am based on interactions I have. So moving out was kind of the first really big ritual of my life to leave home in this kind of forceful way. I need out.
Did it feel like a, or did you make it a ritual? Like, did you decide that you were ritualizing this act, that it meant something more than the, you know, that it became, that you turned it into a ceremony in a way?
Yeah, I didn't. How to say, give it any sort of flair or structure or whatever. But I very much decided for myself that this is a moment that will create a before and an after.
Yeah.
Right. And I think this is a very important thing to a lot of rituals. And also one of the things I love about the ritual work, that ritual is a human process that can really facilitate that shift before and after. Like in a wedding, before the wedding and after the wedding, the relationship is different. Mm-hmm. And it's the ceremony that makes that shift. So I used it for that. And then later in my life, I left Sweden and I remember going across the bridge to Denmark when I was 22, I think, moving abroad. And that was a big step to see my home country like disappear behind me, going towards Switzerland, where I then joined the alternative business school kind of. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really got introduced to ritual. Previously, I had been living quite in ritualized way, you know, moving, organizing a lot of parties. I organized a small festival once. But in that environment, we'd start every day with a ritual of checking in through the day, also with the body and emotions. So we'd become present in our bodies by doing some kind of morning practice, and then check in with how do I feel today, what is my intention. Mm-hmm. So the first part there is about like creating some transparency so people don't judge you if you're kind of slacking off, I guess, because I didn't sleep well, and then they understand that it's okay that Victor is slow today. Yeah, in that environment, there was so much ritual, right? It was every day a lot, and we tried a lot of different spiritual practices too. Mm-hmm. And one of them was kind of a Native American tradition.
Yeah. And
I really couldn't agree with how that was brought in to the school, to the curriculum. It's like, I'd say the word tradition very lightly in this case. I don't know. I didn't like how we were brought through kind of doorways, furthering our use of these perspectives in a very integrated way, where me personally, I was in a time in my life where I wanted to try a lot of different glasses to see the world through. Mm. And then suddenly I found myself in an environment where I was told what glasses to wear and which were the best ones, you know. They were right. You know, they were very useful, but I just didn't like to be forced to wear them. So I left that, school. And with a very newfound relation to ritual. And
how do you use ritual now? Like, what is the benefit of using ritual? Like, is it something that you do every day? Is it just for meaningful moments? Like, how do you use ritual now?
So I definitely have a lot of rituals in my life that are that have a sort of structure. And that have prescribed steps, like a morning routine, and I meditate every day. But I also ritualize a lot of acts. Like when I get on a train, I usually use that stepping on the train as a moment to kind of let go of a chapter in time, as well as a place in space. So what time am I leaving behind now? And allowing that train journey to be kind of a transformative experience where I can leave the train with an intention for the chapter that's opening. And I find that these internal thresholds are very easily ritualized by using physical thresholds, like stepping through doors. Being in the act of traveling, it's very useful. It has at least a lot of potential for being ritualized. So I do that a lot. Before we get on the phone, the call now, I was in a Zen meditation space, which I'm opening, which I'm helping this group to open. This is kind of a collective. And there I'm building a sort of portal installation where there will be an interaction on the way into the meditation space.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of ritual in my life.
Okay. So when this podcast comes out, we will be kind of heading for Christmas. And Christmas is notorious. I mean, it's, for one, it's a, you know, it's a kind of a ritual in itself, right? But it's a ritual on steroids, right? Like, that's been amplified. And also, you spoke earlier about being in the school and being told which glasses to wear, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like Christmas can feel like you're being told which glasses to wear. Right, like you are told how you're supposed to feel or how you're supposed to show up. All of this stuff, right? And like my personal experience of that is not that, because you know, my family and both soul and blood, we have our own rituals and our own things that we do, and we ignore the commercial mass that goes on. We make it about presence and being, communing with one another and making food together and resting together and watching films or having fun and playing together and really just hibernating because it's so wintry here, and which is not true all over the world. If people are listening and they've kind of heard your kind of way into ritual and what ritual can be and the potential that it has, do you have any ideas or suggestions or advice for people who would like to change or feel differently about Christmas?
So when we try to create change through ritual, it's really important to start with separation. So when a child is to become an adult, the first step is to let go of the identity of being a child. Otherwise, it's no space, right? There's that space of identity is already taken by suffering. So it's hard for me to suggest like a format for a new way of celebrating Christmas. What I can suggest for people who want to kind of break their relationship to it and have a formative space following that is to, for example, put up the Christmas tree upside down. is do something to say my relationship to Christmas as it is presented to me is hereby over.
Yeah.
And then from that space, or like following that space, a new format can emerge.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd always suggest just wait with the planning of the new format until after your rites of separation are done.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when you really formative yourself. That's how to become sort of porous.
And can someone do this on their own, right? Like, so if someone knows they're never going to get their family to change Christmas, right? Or how it goes on around them isn't going to change, but they want to change their relationship to it. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's good to have community in that as well. Yeah. Maybe it's not found within the family, but there's definitely people who are critical of how we celebrate Christmas. I just find out for yourself what kind of interactions you're uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
When I act like that, it doesn't feel like me.
Yeah.
That's very inauthentic. And focus on those. And maybe try to figure out why you feel obliged to act like that.
Yeah.
And then kind of liberate that part of yourself instead of focusing on the whole thing. It's probably not that you hate Christmas. It's just a few things within it.
Yeah.
And often that most painful things for a person is that when we act in ways we don't want to act.
Yeah. I agree. My experience of that is so true. You know, like a lot of the discomfort or challenge I found around Christmas, and I could say the same around specific birthdays or, you know, whatever, those kind of important markers in our social calendar, in a kind of a way, that were being celebrated in a way that didn't feel authentic to me,
or I was
being made to show up as a version of me I didn't want to be. That was ultimately what was going on. I was allowing my boundaries or my identity or my opinion or my beliefs to be compromised without acknowledging it and without changing it. And actually, I think ritual holds a huge potential for shifting ourselves in relation to what's going on and really finding some honesty and some truth about ourselves and the situation that we find ourselves in.
I agree.
Hmm.
Yeah. Christmas is a hard one, especially because we are expected to have a good time. <You know? laughs> And then someone says something really stupid and you're not really allowed to critique them because it breaks the old norm. It's not a space for conflict.
Yeah. And I think it's also that thing of feeling like you have to be somewhere. All the noticing of that, that you're not, right? Like if you choose not to put yourself in an environment that's going to be difficult, then it often feels very black and white of like, oh, I'm alone. And like you said before, like you can choose your community and you can create new rituals. I have beautiful rituals with my soul family. Right? I have both, you know, I've created space in my life to be able to see my family and to also see the people that really... they all really matter to me. I feel like my family are going to be listening and be like, we matter. But yes, they all matter. But like Christmas is not, like for me, the hardest part is that Christmas is one day, right? Like it's this huge amount of build up, sometimes for months now, that leads to one day that has to be perfect.
Mm.
And for me, when I shattered that and like did my version of turning the Christmas tree upside down around that, I was like, no, it's a season. It's a season of connection with family. That's what it means to me. And so for me, it's now about spending time playing games, making jigsaws, like making decorations, cooking, eating, whatever it is, being together and choosing to make it about that. And I think that people listening can create their own rituals with their own, in a way that feels meaningful for them around this time of year.
Yeah, and the way you put that is so easy to say to your own family as well. Like no one will judge that. No, it's about gifts. You know, yeah, who would say that? And yeah, just I think a lot of people also have families who don't really enjoy it.
Yes.
So maybe it's, you know, when we feel pain within a constellation, it's often an indicator that other people are feeling pain too.
Yeah.
So
if people want to come and find out more about you, the work that you do, where's the best place for them to come find you?
Yeah, come to Leipzig and find me on the street. I'm not very good at online presence.
Okay.
I will start a thing around how to make rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to not only share like finished things,
yeah, right?
Because I really like the messy process, and that's where I find the most joy.
Yeah,
and I would like to be able to share that.
Okay,
that's when, so I have a Instagram. I guess I have to commit now to make it live before this comes out. It's called How to Make Rituals.
Yes.
And there will be at least one picture there when this airs.
Fantastic. Yeah. I love you for that. Thank you. We will update whatever comes next, because this is a thing that will stay live for a long time.
Mm.
If a website comes, I'll put it in the show notes. And when the Instagram's up,
I have that domain too, howtomakerituals.com. So great. That's the new brand which I'm working on.
We will share more as and when it comes. And you know, one of the things I really love about this is that you came and had this conversation with me before you were ready, but before things were ready, and that's really important, and I really care about that. Will you end with an "I'm an adult, but" with me?
Yeah. Okay. So, I guess I want to connect it to how we started this, around positive freedom and feeling. I'm an adult, but sometimes I have addictive behaviors, I suppose. And I really don't like being stuck and without agency in my actions.
I am an adult, but I miss being allowed to sulk.
Oh, I haven't been sulking in a long time, but I'm sulking about not. Yeah, I'm totally sulking.
I really miss it. I had like a 2.5 minute broody sulk at the weekend, and then my adult kicked in and was like, "You need to go and apologize to your friend because you were just sulky at them."
Mm.
And I went and apologized. I waited 12 hours and then went and apologized. Like, I allowed myself like 12 hours to brood, because that's where I really needed to be, and it was no one's fault. And you know, the adult in me was like, it's no one's fault, you need to explain, and you've got words, and be the grown-up, like all of that stuff. But I really just wanted to soak.
Yeah, but that's great. That's, and then like adding this kind of ritual perspective, is to do that at a picture rather than a person. And it's harmless. You get the stuff out.
I mean, it wasn't at a person. It was, I mean, the only reason it was at a person is because that person walked through me sulking. But, you know, I was just sulking.
All right, sorry.
And the phone rang and they got it. But, you know, anyway, it's for a whole other day. Shouldn't have answered. It's been such a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and talking with me. And we're gonna hold you to the Instagram and the website.
Yeah, that's great. Merry Christmas, everyone. I'll give you, there will be a Christmas ritual to turn your Christmas tree upside down.
Fantastic. I want to see that as the first picture.
Yeah, okay, we'll do it. Unless I get started before, but it will be there.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing, so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.